Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and it's Carl's Cavern. And we want to welcome everyone who's listening. And today we're going to go deep into the cavern, into the music section of it. And we're going to be talking about punk music and photographs and all sorts of history with our special guest, and that would be Jenny Lenz. And say hello, Jenny.
Hi. Hello, Jenny.
So, Jenny, I did warn you. It was Jenny's birthday a couple days ago. And so, unfortunately, we always sing to our guests when it's their birthday. So forgive the fraud, but here goes. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Jenny. Happy birthday to you and many more. Oh, there's the frog.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you. No, thank you. I usually never tell people it's my birthday, but it's a pretty amazing thing considering that punk life was not, and I actually made it to 70, and I feel like I did when I was taking punk photos. It's phenomenally scary, but I'm celebrating it because Debbie Harry just turned 75, and I figure if we can celebrate her turning 75, I'll admit to being 70.
Well, congratulations. I'm a little younger than you. I'm 62. If I make it to 70, I'll do the same thing. I'll jump up and down because I never thought I'd make it here.
I know.
So.
I mean, well, you know, I don't know about you, Carl, but it's, for me, sex and drugs and rock and roll, we did that pretty hardcore, and there were some that we lost along the way. And I don't know how many of us really thought that we would make it to 70. When I say we, I'm talking about that first generation of punks that were pretty hardcore about the drug part, you know, and the hard lifestyle and the burning the candle both ends. But, you know, as Blondie sings, live fast, die young, or something like that, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what the exact phrase is, but you got to live it up while you can, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And, of course, Ian Dury, who's one of my favorite punk people, did, of course, drugs and rock and roll.
That was a perfect opening for you to say that, because I understand that that's one of your favorites. And I heard Ian, he Roxy, I think, and I know that he was hanging out at LA's Mask, which was a rather legendary, quite literally underground club. And I don't know how I happened to be there that day with Color Film, but I took some photos of him. And I don't know if you know that he had something on his teeth. It was the Union Jack. It was the British flag. And I think
I
caught him, with, you know, smiling and up pretty close that you could see that. He was quite a character. And there's a book out on him that or a documentary, one of the two, that I really want to either see or read. I can't remember what it is, but I don't know much about him, but he wrote that great song.
Well, the interesting thing about him, and I was he was one of my heroes. Now, I grew up and I had some physical problems. I had cerebral palsy, so I was in braces for a number of years. Now, of course, Ian had polio. And of course, had the braces all throughout his life. And one of the stories, and I saw him in 80, I think it was 82, near the end of his career with Stiff. And I saw him at CBGB's. And he wrote a song for the British Year of the Cripple, is what they called it at that point in time. Of course, that's not politically correct now, but that's what they called it. And he wrote a song called Spasticus Autisticus, which I happened to see him live. And it's one of the most brutal takedowns, and it's just so friggin' awesome. Seriously. He's a big hero of mine.
Well, absolutely, and understandably. And one of the things that I really love about punk, and there's a whole lot, but one of them is that no limitations and the DIY ethos of doing it yourself and not using any excuse about that I don't know how to do this, or I'm not good enough, or I'm this or I'm that. It's really, punk really showed people that where there's a will, there's a way. And if you can't do it within the establishment that nobody's interested, you just go out there and you do it yourself. And I'm LA-based, and we certainly had bands from New York and England and San Francisco and other places come through LA, and most of them just did everything themselves, forming the band and managing and writing the songs and the music and playing their instruments, unlike sometimes performers had studio photographers, studio musicians, you know, they did it all themselves, and they did their own tours, and they booked their own places, and they had their own record companies they started up, and fanzines, and that goes to me with the photography, that we didn't ask for permission, we just went out and did it. And Ian Dury is a great example of that, of somebody didn't use his medical history as a crutch and handicap as a handicap, and I mean quotes around the use of handicap in both cases, because nowadays we call it disabled, and I'm doing that voice because I've had it up to here with political correctness.
Problem here on this podcast, my dear. Don't worry about it.
I am just appalled that people are offended by every other word. I want to share this one story because to me it is very punk. I came across something on Twitter from dictionary.com that somebody had posted about words we're not allowed to use. So I look at it, and the one that I remember was the word tribal, because it's insulting to Indigenous Americans. And I've been thinking about this story ever since, which has been about a week, and it's, I don't know how many people have heard about the lost tribes of Israel, okay? The Israelis, the Hebrews, have been around for about at least 5,000 years. And I couldn't remember if they were 10 or 12 tribes, so of course I Googled it, and no wonder I couldn't remember. There were 10 that were assimilated by the Syrians in the north, and then there were 2 in the south. So no wonder 10 in the top of my head. And the original 10 were descended from Jacob. Well, my name is Jenny, although that wasn't my birth name, but it was always with a J because my mother's father's name was Israel, and she said it was also Jacob. So I'm descended from Jacob. So if I want to use the word tribal, I want to use the word tribal because I'm a Jew, so sit on it. And that's the problem with this cultural appropriation thing, and the words we're allowed to use, handicapped or whatnot, is that look in the context. When I say don't let a handicap be your handicap, I'm using that specifically because that's stronger than saying don't let your disability be a handicap. It doesn't roll word semantically as well. And people are just so – it's amazing. We are shooting ourselves in the feet. That we're fighting with each other about what your hair can look like and what words you can say and things – and how you are misappropriating culture. And it's like, we've been doing that since the caveman, you know? There's this my background is art.
Thing. Okay.
You know,
yeah.
And music.
And whole...
Music, look, okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what I was going to say is the whole thing about the punk ethos, right? Is that you break through these walls of don'ts. Okay,
yeah,
and it's an act, you know, that's my feeling on it. And to me, punk is not just a type of music or one type of punk music. It's an attitude.
Totally.
And I
want to just finish this up in music. What if we said, well, the Clash couldn't play reggae because they're not Jamaican? And I that's not what I intended on talking to you about, but it's obviously been in my mind. And it is attitude, and it was boundaries that all kinds of music and clothes and hairstyle and whatever. And that's really lost today. A lot of people will say to me, oh, Jenny, you're so lucky. I wish I'd been around then. And my attitude is, There's things you can do today. There's things that the punk is, as you just said, Carl, an attitude. And there we have technology that is a pita in the ass, but it allows us to do a lot of things. And we can go out there and express ourselves, and whether it's musically or it's fanzine online or tweeting or whatever. And I really want to emphasize this. Punk was never meant as something to back the shooter there. It was be present, be in the moment, and push through and keep exploring and moving, just as the Clash explored so much music and the Go-Go's changed their music, and X and so many bands just kept expanding possibility. Oh, Patti Smith, the sea of possibility, or sees the possibility. She was playing with semantics too. Being a poet, she loved to play with loves to play with words. So that's really important, because people always, you know, want me to talk about the past and all this and that, and it's equally important to realize that, as, again, Patti said, quoting her again, people have the power. And now more than any time, especially in America, we need to seize that power. We've got 100 days. It's amazing. We have about 15 weeks to save this country or not, and take the lessons from the past and move forward. So I just wanted to say that. So thank you for letting me say that, Carl.
Oh, that's no problem at all, Jenny. That's no problem at all. So tell me a little bit about how you got started and what were some of the first bands that you took photos of, and how did you get into the scene?
I'm really glad you asked me that.
LA, and what was it like in LA in the 70s?
Okay, well, everybody asks me variations of those questions, how I got started, what was it like, and because that's logical. In fact, for my birthday, and I did this last year as well, I read biographies of artists, primarily painters, because my background is fine art, although I didn't paint, but there's other art forms than painting. And I'd love to know that. I don't know if you've ever seen Woody Allen's Midnight in Paris, which for the most part was a really sucky film, but it was the idea that we want to know, the main character went back in time to hang out with the writers and the painters of the lost generation of the 1920s, and Matisse and Hemingway and Fitzgerald and stuff. We always want to know about the past. Well, I cannot answer that in the 45 minutes or so we have left. In fact, it would probably take about 200 hours. So I've been working on this for years. I mean, we're talking decades, trying to figure out how to share these stories, because I love sharing them. I want to inspire people. And it's also why I took the photos. That's a really important thing, was I took the photos to document this cultural revolution, because I had studied art history, and I studied movie history, and I grew up in the 60s, which was the most fascinating era of music, where we had, starting with Phil Spector and the Wall of Sound, and then the British Invasion, and we had the Beach Boys and Janet Dean, you know, surf music. We had Motown and soul, and we had the San Francisco flower power. You know, there's so much music. And then towards the end of it, we had Joni Mitchell, whom I really love, and Janis Joplin, so, you know, two very different kind of singing, and top of Joplin was the best, but Joni Mitchell, love her. So, and I saw the Beatles at the Hollywood Bowl when they first played, and girls were screaming, and I wanted to hear them, and it turned me off rock and roll, and I saw Joni later, and she wasn't in a good mood, and that turned me off rock and roll. But how did I end up taking rock and roll photos and being the most published early first-generation punk rock photographer on the West Coast? So I started a site long ago, and I would tell stories, and I would post the pictures, and every once in a while I would spend days and days putting together pictures and then narrating it about the germs, or a week in L.A. that when we had the Damned and Television and Blondie and Iggy and the Germs all in one week. It was amazing. But it takes a huge amount of time, and it takes equipment and technology, and I am hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. I really am. I'm just, well, I would say not quite. I've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars doing this, but I am many tens of thousands of dollars in debt. Many, many, many. When I die, they'll put my tombstone. She can't be dead. She still owes her Amazon, PayPal, and Apple computer. And I'm not making it up. I have not paid a credit card bill since January, and I'm not proud of that because I'm bleeding money. So I was really trying to figure out what I could do, and I thought about a podcast, which had been around, I don't know, since like 2005 or something, but you cannot talk about photos. You have to see them, right? I mean, who wants to hear me describe a photo? That's mean, and I never want the word mean used to describe me. So I finally came up with the idea about a week ago, and I've been working on it forever, where listen to the stories, or you can look at pictures, or in some cases there will be the narrated photos, but they take me days and days and days to do. And I have a membership site that I just launched on my birthday, and I immediately, some of my friends signed up, which was very gratifying. And I spent, actually yesterday, I have 3 1.5-hour segments, that's an hour and a half, talking about the photography aspect and also how I got into the photography to a certain point. I mean, that's a long story, actually, unbelievably. But photos I took when I was younger, or why I got my camera, or something about, like I said, about the Beatles, you know, little history about rock and roll. But that I never looked at rock magazines. I never bought albums. I didn't go to shows. But I stopped listening to music until I got boring. You know, why'd the Ramones start? You know, that wonderful Ramones song about, do you remember rock and roll radio? Yeah, I do, because I was a teen when they were a teen, you know? We were listening to Phil Spector's Wall of Sound and, like, say, the British Invasion and all that stuff. But by the 70s, it was, oh, please, Jethro Tull and Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and Yes, and the long guitar solos of heavy metal. It was awful.
Now, I have to admit, I am a Jethro Tull fan. You can castigate me later for that.
No, I had an opportunity to see him. I was down, I think that might have been when I was in college, and friends were going, and they had an extra ticket or something. I just looked at them and said, shut up. Like, oh, no. Oh, no. Okay, that's fine. You know what? I am always really glad that people have something they enjoy, even if I don't. You want to listen to opera? That's fine. That's no problem. You like whatever, fine, no problem, but don't drag me there. So what I actually loved the most, I haven't recorded this part. I have so many stories to tell. I was listening to Joni Mitchell and Stephen Sondheim Broadway. I absolutely love Broadway, but I wanted to, and you were in New York, I wanted to photograph Broadway and ballet as a kid, always wanted to do that, but I couldn't handle the snow. There's no way. And my respiratory system I would be dead by now. So I wanted somehow to be involved with entertainment, but I didn't know how. And then when I found punk, I was determined to get involved. I still had no idea how or why. And I saw the Ramones. I had bought their album when it came out in, I believe it's April 77. I never can get it memorized in my head. But I do know August, not 77, okay, shoot me now, 76. August 11th and 12th, 1976, the Ramones made their West Coast debut at the Roxy Theater in West Hollywood. And I went early the first night, and I sat at Dee Dee Ramone's feet because I felt that he was the most gorgeous man I've ever seen in my life. I still feel that way. And I love looking at men and old movie stars and currently and whatever. I mean, that's one of the appeals of punk rock was, I get to photograph a lot of guys. How cool is that? Really photograph them. I could hang out with them. Some of them I got to know rather well. And it was like, oh, yeah, bring it on. Because I had led a rather sheltered life and just lived through movies and art books. And so now, oh, boy, I get to be with these guys. And the second night, and I did record about this, the second night I, just kind of an afterthought, grabbed my camera before I went to see the Ramones and took pictures. Oh, I didn't record this part. See, because I could talk for like 6 hours, so there's parts I leave out. I'm like, okay, I only want to talk for half an hour. I met the Ramones. I have to write about that because I haven't really talked about the Ramones. I'm going to be recording about that because I've lots. I hung out with Dee Dee and amazing shows. But I met them that night, August 12th, and just like Alice fell down that rabbit hole where I started taking photos and getting published, and none of it was planned. I only knew that something exciting was happening and they needed to be documented. So that's the important takeaway, is that I knew rock and roll changes. I know that art and just like fashion changes, but rock and roll changes, and it certainly did in the 1960s, or all these different genres. And I read somewhere that the Beatles really were only together for like, or famous for 6 years, from 63 to 69, something crazy like that. And if bands weren't together, they mutated, they lost members or something, or they changed their sound or their look and whatever. So I knew that it would change, and I knew it needed to be photographed because I loved looking at the old movie books, and I didn't know who these people were, but it gave me great enjoyment, and I wanted my photos to do to others what those photos did to me, to inspire people, go buy these records, go see these people, pick up a guitar, get in a band, pick up a camera, take pictures, or just go to a show, go listen, and that's what really got me into all of this, was as an art historian, as a cultural historian, that because I knew how important that was to me. It wasn't this great love of or knowledge of rock and roll. It was, oh, my God, this is revolutionary art. I know art, and it needs to be documented. And it just happened to be that. And there's other photographers who felt that way about the Laurel Canyon scene or about heavy metal. I could have taken some more photos of Van Halen. I certainly had opportunities. I could have taken photos of a great many people that could have made a lot of money. But I really wanted to focus on punk because it was so much fun. And the music was so energetic, and it was very political. I think it's pretty obvious I'm political. I mentioned about getting out there and voting and putting that we've got 100 days to save our democracy, and it's not a joke. I always found punk very political. So those are some of the answers about it. It was because I was I grew up reading Newsweek, so I grew up on politics and the pictures of Broadway and ballet. And somebody on Twitter just asked this today. They said, what if you had followed your childhood dreams? And my tweet, I'm not looking at it, so my memory was in capital letters. I did follow my childhood dreams. Yeah. I made art and I teach. And those are the two things that I've wanted to do for as long, I mean, since I was 3, 4, 5 years old, is make art and teach. And that's what I've always done. I just never knew what form the art would be. And to this day, I'm surprised. I'm a photographer? That's what I ended up being? Oh, not end up. I'm sorry. That sounds badly. That's where I found my calling, photography. So, but it made a lot of sense. It's just that I was really good in a lot of different art forms. It was really hard to decide what to focus on, and photography ended up top, that it's endlessly fascinating. And Carl, when you got the Ramones and the Clash and Blondie and Patti Smith and X and the Germs and the Screamers and all the fans and Ian Dury and Gang of Four and Nina Hagen, all these people, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, the Rolling Stones, to photograph, that's a pretty good decision.
So I need to just get in here for a second. So we were talking about historical perspective. Now, of course, you take a look at the bands and the music, and there's the historical perspective there. But there's also the fashion and the people that were drawn there to that music and the punk ethos in terms of looks and that. Now, here in New York, there's a number, and I'll get you a couple sites that on Facebook that specifically look at the fashion and so on and so forth. Now, as you were doing your photographs of the bands, were you also focusing on the clientele, on the people that were there?
This is such a great question. You've got great questions, Carl. Thank you. For many, many years, when people would contact me to interview me or to do something, the number one thing I would mention, particularly these are usually women, and I, not that men aren't into fashion, but I just, it may be the questions that they came to me as well. I would always say, I want to talk about fashion. And nobody was ever interested. And that's actually something that I want to talk about on my, I want to mention this. It's called Punk Pioneers Podcast and, oh, Photos. Yeah, all these P's. Punk Pioneers Podcast and Photos. And then I'd also add videos. And my site is punkpioneers.com. And I have a lot of fashion photos on the site. But beyond photographing men, whom I really enjoyed, there are a lot of very handsome men involved in punk, I loved what people were wearing. And one of the interesting things to me that I've never written about, but I've told people, so I wouldn't be surprised if it's out there because I've yapped about it for years, is there was definitely different look of whether you were in Los Angeles, New York, or England. Part of it has to do with weather. You know, in England, you're going to wear what Malcolm McLaren and Vivian Westwood were making over at Sex in their store. Which would be woolens. You know, you're going to wear heavier clothes because it's cold there. It's cold and damp. Mm-hmm. And in New York, you have a lot of the same situations because you've got, from what my understanding is, hot, humid summers. But, yeah, it gets kind of cold and snowy and all in New York. But in L.A., and the same in San Francisco, can get a little cold. But in L.A., it's hot. Now, the weather has changed, and I don't care what people say about climate change, yay or nay, but talk to people who are born and raised and have lived in Los Angeles the last 40, 50, 60 years. I never had a raincoat. I never had closed-toe shoes. We wore very flimsy clothes because when you were at a club, it's hot. You've got a lot of people crowded in a small space, and you're dancing. The molecules are moving. It gets sweaty hot. We didn't even have cloak rooms. At least I think in New York and England, you've got cloak rooms. We didn't have anywhere we could even check in a coat or an umbrella. So we wore really colorful clothes and rather revealing. You know, we didn't have to cover up because the weather. We also have this other really cool thing, Hollywood. It's not just Hollywood. Well, if you know the song Los Angeles by X, and they talk about the idle rich, we have a lot of money here, show business, okay? And you've got the managers and lawyers and plastic surgeons and, you know, everything. We have you know, LA also has a lot of industry. We have the rise of aerospace and defense industry. There's a lot of money in Southern California, and certainly people who came here and bought real estate as well. And socialites and Hollywood, the movies, and people discarded clothes. So you could go to a thrift store, or you could go to a yard sale or church bazaar back in the 70s and pick up things for nothing. And so my friends would show up at parties or hanging out on the street or at a show, and you saw all different eras of clothing and all different styles, and then they were creative. They were making their own clothes and making their own belts or jewelry or whatever, and dyeing the hair and styling and makeup. We did not hire any stylists. I don't think most people did in those days, but certainly not in LA. And we set a lot of styles, just as they did. I was reading about Debbie Harry, and she was known for wearing Stephen Sprouse, who I don't know from fashion, but he later became major in the 80s. And Debbie was always very stylish. And as I mentioned already, Vivian Westwood and Malcolm McLaren, people who later became famous and influential, but were very cutting edge, or some of us just did it for the fun and didn't pursue it as a career or anything, but fashion was huge. And I said I love movies. Well, part of the appeal of the movies, I can look at a movie still and tell you what year it's from. I think about this all the time. There's documentaries on Turner Classic Movies. I haven't had that in years. They have bumpers, which are just little 5 or 10 minute fillers between the end of one movie and the beginning of another.
Absolutely.
And they would do a bumper on Betty Davis, and they're talking about 1939. They showed a photo of her from the early 30s. I'm like, don't you go there. Don't you go there. I know the difference. Hairstyle and eyebrows. Betty Davis did not wear pencil-thin eyebrows in 1939. Don't you pull that crap on me. But they do that all the time because the people who put – I know, they license my photos. They put the wrong dates. They put the wrong people. They put the wrong venue. It's just endemic. People have egos. They don't want to hear about it, especially from the photographer, about the facts. So I really pay attention to the who, what, where, when. And – the fashions of punk are amazing. The other thing that blew my mind was back in 2006, I think, Abrams put out Punk 365, and I have photos in that. And I was looking through the book, and what I was surprised was I was pretty much the only one taking color photos, period. And also, I photograph more fashion, at least than what I saw in that book, or that I have seen. You know, I just don't see a lot of fashion photos. Now, Jim Jacoy came along after I, and he took a lot of photos with his Polaroid up in San Francisco, and he's been very good about publicizing it, very good. So he gets all the credit for being the punk fashion photographer. But he'll tell you I was there first, because he told me that. I inspired a lot of other people. But I didn't always go out there and market it. That takes a lot of time and energy, and I'd rather make art than market it. But fashion is really vital. And now I see, or the past, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years, I see the influence of art punk from hair to makeup, fingernail polish, jewelry, clothing, purses, shoes, stockings, everything. We totally changed the way people dressed. Totally. Punk had a bigger influence on fashion than even the hippies, which were major. When I was growing up, that was in the magazines a lot about hippie fashion. But what has really lasted has been the punk fashion and the punk influence in fanzines and cinematography and filmmaking and things. Punk attitude and punk ethos, but the punk aesthetic, the look and feel of punk, it's huge, which is what I always predicted. And call me Cassandra Jenny, it really is huge. But a lot of that came from my looking at old movies, fashion, art, things like that. And I think part of it is just intuition. I'm just saying this stuff is amazing, and that's why I took the photos and worked so damn hard on it from 76 to today. I there's never a day I take off at all. I'm always working on my stuff.
Well, good for you. Now, one thing we haven't discussed is the music itself. Now, before... Hello.
Doc? Hello, I'm still here.
Yes, hi. I'm patching in the caller right now.
Oh,
okay, we got a caller.
Caller, you're on.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
This is Chuck.
Hey, Chuck. I've been trying to get you on this show forever. Nice to have you here.
I've been really enjoying myself listening to it. I had a dual question because I've been on hold for a little bit. But
okay, go ahead. By the way, before you go on, Chuck, Jenny, this is Chuck Bob. He runs Punk's Not Dead along with Scott Cran and Susie Hawk. So say hello to Chuck.
Yes, hello. Well, the minute I heard him say Chuck, I knew who he was. But hi.
Hi. Well, first half of my question is, I'm more of a punk rock historian out of the fact that I have to be because I'm a little bit younger. But I remember listening to Jello Biafra from the Dead Kennedys. I was listening to a lot of his spoken word stuff. And he would speak in reverence of the first time he heard the Ramones and how it changed him and how they were just loud and how the songwriting was just like, you know, different. It was like, now I want to snort some glue. Now I want something to do, you know, and it really lit a fire under him. And speaking with or listening to you talk about, you know, just being there, I was hoping maybe you could get into a little bit about what it really was like being there, and if it the amount of the impact that it really did have to you and like your peers. And then I was listening to you further there about the punk rock attire, and there's obviously been a lot of issues by society, especially in the 80s, you know, I mean, with the Misfits and everything and them being locked up and people just being locked up all the time for wearing punk rock clothing. I mean, it wasn't always so chic. It wasn't always so acceptable. So I was wondering if maybe you had any experiences with that in terms of, you know, people judging you back then and what that was like, being judged by, you know, probably the Eisenhowers of that generation, you know.
Well, these are fantastic questions. I'm so glad you asked. I'm actually going to talk about the attire first because that's such a good point. Okay, I personally did not ever get hassled by the cops. I do know that a lot of people were, but I wasn't a teenage boy running around 2 o'clock in the morning in Hollywood Boulevard. So we should just really make that clear that I wasn't the kind of person who usually would attract attention from cops. Not that that was deserved. It's kind of like a woman being raped. You know, what were you wearing? And I'm not justifying that the kids who wore motorcycle boots and chains and things deserved to be hassled. No, of course, that was absolutely wrong. But I never personally experienced it, but I certainly am aware of it. And I think that it tended to happen in a different circle that I was running around a little bit later. I did not shoot hardcore, and there was a real reason. I didn't even know it existed. You know, I didn't know about adolescents and TSOL and middle class, and you mentioned Misfits, and I'm sure I'm overlooked a lot of names. What band was my boy?
Bad
in?
Brains. Got to throw in Bad Brains on that.
Bad
too.
Brains. Okay, Bad Brains, Bad Religion. What was Mike Watt in? What band was he in? I don't know. I don't know those at all. That's not my genre. It's why when my book, My Pioneers, which came out in 2008, my editor said we want to have a subtitle. The title was Punk Pioneers, and he and I spent a lot of time on the phone, and this was the same when Spin Magazine interviewed me, and pretty much when most people interview me, they walk away with, it sounds like so much fun. So the subtitle was When Punk Was Fun. So hardcore bands or shows were not fun. I went to one at the Fleetwood, which initially was called the Smokestack. I was down there for the Ramones. I photographed them in August 76, and the Smokestack became the Fleetwood, and it's down, I think, Redondo. I said this beginning to Carl. I'm born and raised in L.A. Geography is not my best point. No, I don't do well in geography. I usually am looking at buildings and trees and things around me rather than street signs or have any idea where I'm at. It's just the way I look at things is, yeah. So anyway, so I was at the Fleetwood. It was like being in hell. It was dark and scary and fighting and testosterone and scary. I could not handle it. I'm a 5'5" woman wearing Birkenstock sandals with an expensive camera. Get me out of here. It was not fun. So so I only heard about this with the guys who were hassled by the cops, and that was a totally different scene, but they were violent in some ways too, and I kind of hit upon that, and it was just I don't know anything about that, but it was a very repressive. Oh, no, wait a second. When has the United States not been a very repressive society? We've been against blacks. We've been against women. We've been against gays. We're against young punks. If you step out of line and you look different, cops are going to hassle you. That's just a fact of life. And as much as some people will say, well, it never happened to me, therefore it never happened, that's no.
Can we just say bullshit to that?
Yeah, and so there definitely were problems, but I never had problems like that. But the problems that I had about my attire, however, were, okay, hello, I have magenta hair, and I've got this wild eye makeup, and I have this unusual clothes, and I'm talking about Ramones and Patti Smith and X and the Screamers, to record company publicists and the press. Do you think they took me seriously or thought I was out of my rocker? And
yeah, probably just like a fangirl, yeah.
Well, the thing is, I don't know this fangirl. I think they just thought I was nuts. And the reason that I even had access to them was I was a really good photographer, and they would license photos of the bands that were on their label. So that's why I got to know these people. And I do remember one time, Brennan Fall, something like that, who later went on to very big things, being a head publicist for David Geffen Records in the 80s, very big, 80s, 90s, whatever. And she initially, along with Sue Sawyer, worked at ABC Records. They had a little band that they were kind of handling called the Ramones. And they sat me down and said, now, what is it you like about the Ramones? They didn't get it. Okay, do you really have to be explained what it is about the Ramones? And I was so glad to, have an opportunity to talk and go, all the things you said, they're really exciting. They have all this energy and they're funny. I used to talk to Dee Dee about this, ask him about the songs, beat on the brat with a baseball bat, and Dee Dee and his adorable voice. And I wish we had I didn't have a tape recorder. I would have loved to have recorded him telling stories. But he'd say, well, Jenny, we'd be walking down the Bowery and, we're all kind of funny looking. And, Joey's so weird looking. And guys would give us a hard time. So we'd carry the baseball bat around so they'd leave us alone. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm a nice Jewish girl from the Valley, and I've never experienced anything like this, and this is so exciting.
That's amazing.
Oh, my God. It was like real-life movies, because I grew up in the 1950s. We only had a black and white TV. I didn't even see color till I was in college, which was 1968. Okay, so I grew up. Everything was film noir because we didn't have a color TV. But they used to show a lot of film noir films on TV, and I feel that I would love to talk about is film and punk are definitely related, and definitely when you look at X, who went back more to the source. So I'm sure they read Dashiell Hammett and Raymond Chandler, and certainly they read Charles Bukowski. I don't even know if he were writing in the 50s because he's not my thing at all. But it was about the dark side of life that I was very attracted to. I've never been someone who looked at life like, you know, it's all Disney princesses and stuff. I grew up in a very abusive family, and a lot of people who came to early punk had similar situations. There were runaways, and there were kids who, like myself, who were beaten, and a variety of different things. And so even though I'm real optimistic and cheery and drove people crazy because I was always smiling and laughing and talking happy talk, I'm definitely aware of the dark side of life. And that's what I loved about with the Ramones, that you know, they were street. And when I asked Dee Dee, what is 53rd and 3rd about? I mean, I had seen Midnight Cowboy, but I had never met a male hustler before. I never met anybody who talked about, not that I believe, I don't think Dee Dee ever hurt anybody. He was so sweet. But he talks about, you know, killing somebody. I mean, it was like, it wasn't your typical rock and roll song, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't hippie shit.
Okay, so I want to jump in here for a second and just say,
sure,
being the New Yorker of the crowd, okay,
right,
you can see some dark shit here.
Oh,
and
wow,
there's no doubt about
it.
Midnight Cowboy
and Panic in Needle Park. I mean, I had seen in film, those were later films in the 70s. But
yeah,
the
yeah, but
50s,
those were films,
these,
okay?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking
real
life.
Yeah, yeah.
And one quick story I had was, I worked at Carl Fisher, which is down in the East Village, and I spent most of my time in the 80s in the East Village. I love the East Village. But there was a bunch of, what's the word? I guess you would say transgender prostitutes at this point, you know. And this is during the AIDS crisis, and one of them had gotten beat up. And I had gotten to know them because I'd go into work and I'd just say hello and so on and so forth. And you see that, and nobody would talk. So I made sure that somebody called the ambulance. I made sure they got to the hospital. You know, I was covered with blood. I didn't fucking care. Okay? And you get to see these things, and it really impacts you. It impacts you in such a way where you see the darkness. And,
oh, yeah,
and one of the things about punk music, and I'm going to say this question to both of you, okay? If we take a look at what punk groups we really like, what is it about that specific punk group you're going to choose that connects with you? You know, and let's try that with Chuck first.
Wow, that's a loaded question. I guess what comes to my mind is it's a very basic to me, and it's something I've always struggled with. It's a very basic human instinct for me to question everything. And growing up, everything is you're told, you know, what is good, what is bad. And it's pretty much put in you since, you know, you're a toddler. You know what I mean? This is the setup. This is what you do. You do this. This is step one, and then step two, step three, step four, and you get your mortgage. And I think that punk rock it originates at that level where it's between you have this choice as an adolescent, as a late teen, where you sit there and you're not that smart yet, all you really know is that this doesn't sound like what I want to do. Because it's basically like, it's like that Twisted Sister video, you know, where the guy's in his in his room or whatever. Even any of those cheesy 80s videos, you know, where it's like
a sense of rebellion. You know, I mean,
right.
That's what
and
you're
then,
talking
well,
about. It's a rebellion
well, what
against society.
Yeah, and what happens is that you kind of make a choice as a kid whether you're going to rebel against that or you're not. And I think that that's why punk rock sticks with you forever, because those songs, whether they were your Ramon songs that affected Jello Biafra in that age, or, you know, all those 80s punk bands that affected the early 90s bands and the mid-90s scene that occurred with the skateboarding and all of that which transpired, all it really is that it's that seed that's planted, and it never leaves you. You'll be 50, 60, 70, 80 years old,
70.
And someone will tell you, wherever you're at, someone will tell you to do something, and you'll go, your first instinct will tell them to fuck off, because you like punk rock.
Yes.
And so, like, a lot of times when people ask me what I like everything, man, but I like punk rock. And I base a lot of decisions off of that, live or die, because at least when I choose that I like punk rock, that made me feel good. The other one didn't make me feel good. So
I like what you just said there about made you feel good in punk rock, because being a woman, being a nice Jewish girl, I was always told certain behavior, and then I would feel really guilty if I actually were honest and it was an opposing opinion or thought or whatever. And now sometimes people will give me a hard time, and I definitely love using the phrase fuck off, and then I'll follow it up and I'll go, how's that for punk attitude? Because people, they got this thing about that, oh, I really love punk and I love your pictures and you're so cool and stuff, and then they give me a hard time and they want to argue with me or whatever, and I finally get to this point, I realize life is too short, and they're just, some people, as X sang, some people give me the creeps. There are people who just live to give you a hard time. So I will just say, fuck off, how's that for punk attitude? And it's like, you know what? Yeah. the Ramones and Jello, the Ramones were huge. And that also goes back to Dee Dee, that I used to, this is summer of 76. They'd never left New York other than, you know, they went to England. And then I think they went up to Connecticut where they had beer bottles thrown at them. And then they came to L.A. And there was a small group of people whose lives, for most of us, were not only just changed, but we then went out and carried the banner. You know, we started bands, or took pictures. They started fanzines, Pleasant Game, and started Lobotomy. You know, there's so many influences, and the Ramones continued that through their touring, even in the 80s. But certainly, and you mentioned planting that seed. But I remember being at the Sunset Marquee, which is where they stayed when they first came here, and I asked Dee Dee, I used to say this to Dee Dee all the time, you guys are going to be bigger than the Beatles. And he'd say, Jenny, you're crazy. I mean, he just couldn't conceive of that. And not only music, but the whole look and feel and the whole ethos and everything. And that's what I was saying earlier about that punk has influenced our culture even more than the 60s or the hippies or even the Beatles, who were so huge and definitely influenced people in the 60s. Fashion and music, I mean, they were everywhere. I love the Beatles, and we certainly know Dee Dee did. You know, that's how I got the name Ramones. McCartney used to check in. I was saying to the people out there who may not know this story, but Paul McCartney used to check into hotels under false names, and one of them was Ramon, and that's why Dee Dee chose that name. So, and of course,
that's
Paul's
amazing.
A bassist, and Dee Dee's a bassist. So I never, ever want to say what band is more important than the other. One led to the other. The Beatles were a change. I mean, they were like the Declaration of Independence, you know. It was like totally revolutionary. There was nothing like the Beatles and all the bands and the music and everything that it's they spawned and changed culture. Then it, that was the early 60s, 63, 64, and then a decade later, the early 70s, it was all sucky and awful. You remember Rock and Radio, and then you had some glitter glam, and you got the Dolls and the Stooges and some others who inspire these four guys from Queens to start up a band, and the whole cycle starts all over again, and they become huge. And so the Ramones, it's like an earthquake, a tidal wave, a tsunami. You know, an earthquake will cause a tsunami. You know, I mean, it was just this chain reaction. And those of us who saw the Ramones early on, whether it were at the Roxy in 76 or then I came back and I photographed them in February 77 at the Whiskey, which was cool because I could stand on the stairs and shoot the whole band, whereas at the Roxy they had, it's a little industry showcase place. It was meant for people just to sit there and drink and look at rock and roll bands. And I couldn't get up and move around. We had chairs. And so at least with the Whiskey, you could get up and move around, take photos and dance and the whole bit. But the Ramones were just every adjective that you can find. Adorable, cute, angry, energetic, passionate, brilliant. I used to say that to Dee Dee. I go, you're so funny, you're so smart. And he'd go, what are you talking about? I mean, that Dee Dee, he didn't get how brilliant, how handsome, how funny he was. And that actually added to his charm, that it wasn't something he was deliberately trying to do. And I think that's the same with Johnny and Joey and Tommy. They just were doing what comes naturally. And it just resonated with us because they were so real, so down to earth, and freaking brilliant. You know, Johnny's guitar playing and Joey, the way Joey sang. And then Tommy kind of kept them together. He was kind of the same person and certainly helped behind the scenes quite a bit. And they just, it was like with the Beatles, these four people who came together and spontaneous combustion, you know, a nuclear bomb. Changed the world.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Chuck. Then I'm going to jump in. Go ahead.
Okay. Just real quick. You know how, like, life imitates art, music imitates art. You know, these big bands, they come, and then art follows, and attitudes follow, and mentalities follow, too. And I was wondering if maybe just the fact that they were so cool and so real, and did that sort of have a different effect on the crowd that you saw?
Oh,
maybe they weren't
superficial. Yeah, I mean, I met them, and there were people backstage. You can meet them. They were down to earth. It wasn't this thing with a bunch of security guards or at. I met Eddie Van Halen and David Lee Roth backstage at the Whiskey before they were signed, and they had attitude. We all knew they were going to be huge. That's what I said earlier. I could have made a lot of money photographing them. We all knew what Van Halen was going to be, but you couldn't get near them in terms of their attitude. I mean, yeah, I took pictures backstage and stuff, but I didn't want to be near them. Whereas with the Ramones, you could hang out with them. They were fantastic. And I found that was another thing with the whole punk scene, that people were so accessible. And that did change in the 80s, where it was big money and just whatnot, that it became a lot harder to take photos and access. And the whole industry changed. That's a whole other hour talk. And so it was at the beginning of anything, it's kind of like with the movie industry. Anybody could make movies and, you know, produce, write, direct, star, and then later it became more of a industry and more closed. And it was a special time. And I was thinking of time. I want to make sure and share this, that because I worked so freaking hard on this. You can go to my site, Punk Pioneers, because we were pioneers. We were trailblazers, and especially if you're in LA, you're as far west as you can go. But I certainly photographed and loved British and New York bands and bands from all over. So punkpioneers.com, I have a lot of photos, and I have some stories, and then I started this new program that's gotten really good responses, and I'm so excited because I love telling these stories, and I keep adding content, and it's just a few dollars a month, and you can get, and I want people to ask questions. I even say that. I say that on the site, and I say that at the end of some of the recordings, is let me know what you want to know, because I could talk till for the next decade.
Yes, I can definitely second that. You have been an amazing guest. I mean, you just go, I don't have to do anything. This is wonderful.
Well, I grew up in a family of storytellers, and I'm a reader, and I love movies with good stories. And I think that all comes together. Okay, I wanted to be a movie maker. I wanted to be a director, but I didn't have any stories to tell. So it turns out, be careful what you wish for, because... And having the photos help. There's a lot of people out there that do live things and they write and they're known as the authority and they have actually insulted me, diminished me. They send people, tell people that they turn people against me. And I don't take it personally. It's just you're missing out in history. When you look at the photos, you see who was where it was, sometimes when, and I'm pretty good about the dates. And I ask a lot of people, too, about dates. I do a lot of research. But there's a lot of fabrications. Let's use that word. Memories are malleable. We remember what we want to. And a lot of people I photographed who go out there talking and writing, they were drunk. I was not. And the more I look at the photos, the more I see. I keep finding people in my photos I didn't know I photographed because maybe I didn't know them then and I know them now. And I go, oh, that looks like so-and-so. And, oh, I recognize that person. Or, so there, I'm always digging up more information. It's kind of like finding a gold mine and you keep digging and you find another vein, you know. It's like, oh, I thought we were all tapped out, but no, there's more gold. So please, punkpioneers.com, and that has a link to where people can join and can hear, you know, like a podcast. You can listen to it or you can look at pictures. And then in some cases, there are videos. One of the things I want to do, I'm so excited about this, is talk about and show proof sheets because that way people can see what was going on backstage or at a party or a show. Because right now, all we ever get to see is one or two pictures of somewhere and you don't get the whole feeling. And that is also why people can say whatever they want because out of context. And so I really want to share that. But it's too expensive. It costs me money to do this. And the only way I can do it is people pay just a few dollars a month. They'll have access. And also, tell people. Because I mentioned I don't like to do marketing. I do all this myself. The photos don't get scanned themselves. The stories don't get written themselves. The marketing doesn't happen by itself. And I need help. I hate Facebook. I hate Instagram. I'm not on TikTok or I don't know what's going on Snapchat. I don't know where, I don't do Reddit and I do Twitter, but I do it mostly politically, although they have a good
that punk rock coming out.
Yeah. So I really need people to share the word and often just posting it once ain't enough. We get bombarded with information and I have tons of photos taken from my site. Fucking credit me, because by putting Pioneers on it or Jenny Lenz, that leads people to more photos. It's not an ego thing. It's just that I'm fucking tired of people saying, well, what's the story when I posted it 10 times over the last 10 years? I just, you know, if you can't pay a few dollars a month, then shut the fuck up and get off my back. I haven't paid my credit card bills in 6 months, okay? And not only that, my bones are thinning, and I'm supposed to be taking calcium, and I cannot afford to buy minerals and calcium. So before my body falls to ashes and crumbles, and while I'm still able to type, spend a few dollars. Yeah, I'm glad you guys laugh, because that's the truth. Is these people would just feel like posting it. I'm like, I have a site. And have you ever, you should do a site. I've had a site for 20 years. Have you ever heard of Google? So, you know, I really appreciate people. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the attitude's coming out.
I'm so lazy. You're lazy, lazy, lazy.
I got to say, it has been a pleasure having you on. And we got to do this again.
I was enjoying
we'll do a follow-up. That's it. Now, Chuck, before you get off the line, I want you to...
I don't want to end by saying, play so lazy, but use the Google for God's sakes, okay? And put my name or Punk Pioneers on my photos. That's all I'm asking, because all that means is that you can then get more information, because when you give me credit and you pay me some money, I put out more content. And if you're too lazy to do that, then you don't get more content. That's I have to put that in context, because people get mad at me for calling them names. It's like, well, I don't owe you anything, but you owe me something, because I'm paying for this. And I need to pay for my computer and my Amazon credit card and my PayPal and my Calcin before I end up in a wheelchair. And that's not a joke. I'm 70. So I would love to do this again, and I loved the questions, and they were really great. And you guys are an awesomest.
Oh, well, thank you much. Now, Chuck, before you get off the phone, can you do a little plug for Punk's Not Dead?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
There's nothing I'd rather do.
Okay, then I'll do
night.
It, okay? I'll do it. Punk's Not Dead is a website, Facebook page, Facebook page. That I've been a member of a number of years. And Chuck and Susie and Scott do a wonderful job. It's a bunch of people that are definitely punk-oriented, but that's not all that we post there. And it's a good community, and I do recommend it highly. So if you have an interest in punk music, I suggest you look for Punk's Not Dead on Facebook. It's real easy to find, and they're good people, and I recommend them highly. Now, I'm going to keep going here because we have a couple things since we're going to end up here in a couple minutes. First off, Doc, are you there? Oh, Doc.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, so what do we have coming up on Sunday on the Sludge Pit?
On the Sludge Pit this Sunday, we have a show about films that have been banned, whether it be political reasons, just plain nasty reasons, or just because people can't get their heads out of their butts. It's going to be banned film.
Okay, so we're doing that on Sunday. Adam has a show on Friday. I forget which one he's doing, but the Cathode Ray Emission. So he always has a good bunch of people together on that, and that's this Friday. Now, also, we have a special announcement, which is not ready yet, but I will give you a little hint. On Tuesday, we're going to have a special premiere episode of a new show that is connected with a group that I'm involved in on Facebook called Incredibly Strange Films. And ISF is the largest film community on Facebook, as far as I know, with nearly 270,000 members.
Wow, I see that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm one of the admins there. But this is something I've been wanting to do, and we're going to have a special guest, who I'm not going to say who it is yet, who's a film director, and hopefully these series of podcasts will all be members and also film directors or people who have worked in film. We're going to try to do this at least, I'd say, hopefully twice a month. But we have the premiere episode already set for this Tuesday, and the actual announcement will go out tomorrow, but I wanted to let everyone know that we're doing that here on Deviant Legion. Jenny, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on, my dear, and I hope you enjoyed yourself.
Oh, I did, and I want to thank you, Carl, because you were very persistent. I just wanted to have something a value to share with people, so that when they said, you know, post more pictures and tell more stories, and now I can say, yes, I'm doing that. And I also photos as well, too. But I want to thank you for being patient, because I knew, I don't think I knew what I was going to do when you contacted me, but I knew that I wanted to figure out some way to tell the stories and share the photos and be able to afford to be able to do that. So I really appreciate your persistence and your patience, and both of you have been really great and wonderful questions and feedback, and it's been a blast. And anytime, I'm up for it.
Yeah, yeah, we will have you on later. I can guarantee you that. You know, we may want to just structure it a little more, but you and I can talk about that later.
Well, I asked you that. I always do.
I know. I figured this time was. Well, let's just do it freeform and see where it goes. And so that's good.
I love it, though. I think that we covered some real good ground. And it's kind of like when I saw bands, when they I think about the Go-Go's and X immediately. First I thought of X, but also Go-Go's, where you never knew where they were going to go with the songs. And after you'd seen them over a period of months and stuff, they started to come together, but it was the whole journey that was really awesome. And even then, particularly with X, you never knew exactly how they would deliver a song, which made them so dynamic and so wonderful. So I'm all for freeform too.
Okay. Well, listen, again, thank you very much. And Chuck, thanks so much for calling in. We'll be talking, but yeah, we'll really appreciate it. And
show party.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot, Chuck. It really was appreciated as you called in. And I want to thank all our listeners. And for those who haven't listened yet, they'll be posted on the Deviant Legion page and on my own page and various other pages. And not to worry, we will get listeners. And Jenny, hopefully this will work out for you, and we'll get some more into people interested. And don't forget, it's punkpioneers.com, and that's her website, and please sign up. excuse me. And anyway, thank you very much, folks, and we're going to call it a night. So say good night, everyone.
Good night,
good
everyone.
Night.
Thank you. Keep on
good
rocking.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.